Today's episode of the Film Stage Show is brought to you by Mubi. For your free 30-day trial of Mubi, go to mubi.com/filmstage.
Well, no one told me about her, the way she lied. Well, no one told me about her, how many people cried. But it's too late to say you're sorry. How would I know? Why should I care? Please don't bother trying to find her. She's not there.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. As always, I am your host, Brian J. Rowan, and with me today on this post-Thanksgiving Sunday, we have Michael Snydell.
Hello. I like the 60s rock kick we're on the podcast music.
It's the golden age of all things. Movies, music, food, probably. We also have Bill Graham. And let's be real, like, unless we watch a movie about, like, partying too much or being, like, an angsty teenager, this is pretty much the only era I can go to, because we definitely can't have anything contemporary. No pop music that's contemporary, anyway.
You crusty old fucker.
I know. Ah, these kids with their EDM music. Anyway, we are here today to talk about two films that came out this past holiday weekend. The first will be a brief review of Moana, the newest Disney film to come out. And then we will be talking Allied, which stars Marion Cotillard and Brad Pitt, directed by Robert Zemeckis. We didn't have a roundtable last week because time just did not allow for it.
But sorry, we will be, it's cheese.
Well, God, Jesus, it's not your fault. I thought it was Bill's fault.
Yeah, no, it's Bill's fault. Yeah, let's go with that.
Okay, whatever. I'll fall on that cross.
You were moving, and you were like, oh, I'm moving. I can't talk when I'm moving. And I'm like, all right, whatever. It doesn't matter. Look, we'll be talking about our roundtable stuff this coming week, so you only had to wait an extra week for it. And during that time, someone gave us a great idea for something to talk about that ties into Thanksgiving. So we will be talking about, on the next roundtable, food movies, I guess is the best way to put it. Our favorite movies with food as a kind of centerpiece. And we will also be asking ourselves whether a movie making one cry is a proper indicator of its success. Which I know Michael Snyder has strong feelings about. So that's what's going to be coming up in the week ahead. I don't remember what we're going to be talking about for next week's movie, so I wish I could give you all a heads up there, but I can't. Yeah. Sorry.
We definitely talked about it in advance. Definitely.
We have discussed what we will be watching through the end of the year so much that I think it's actually been detrimental to me knowing what we're going to be talking about week to week. I just have no goddamn idea. Before we get into our reviews, let me remind everyone to follow us on Twitter at Film Stage Show. Follow us on Facebook. Search for The Film Stage Show. You can email us, podcast@thefilmstage.com. And, of course, it's the holiday season. If you're in the giving mood, you should write us a review on iTunes. Give us a comment. Give us a rating. Let us know how we're doing. It helps people to find our fair little show if we have more ratings. We're currently sitting pretty with a 4.5-star rating. That's fine. That's fine, I guess. But I'd really love to have us at 5 stars. So get on there and give us some good ratings. So that means if you're listening to this and you hate us, you don't have to do any of this.
Don't do that. Don't do that. Yeah.
Don't do it. Don't be an asshole. All right. We're brought to you, as always, by Mubi, the streaming online cinema. Mubi's curators choose a selection of films that they think that you will love. You have 30 days to watch each film before it disappears off of Mubi. And you get a new film each day. So every day you can open your Mubi app and it's like Christmas. You know, I'm just going to talk about nothing but Christmas from now until, let's say, January 30th. It's going to be wall-to-wall Christmas analogies. So if you want every day to be cinematic Christmas, get on Mubi and get your free 30-day trial by going to mubi.com/filmstage. Also, anyone who is in New York or L.A., Mubi is actually releasing its first theatrical film in the U.S., and that is, and I never asked for clarification on how this is pronounced, Baden-Baden or Baden-Baden. I do not know. B-A-D-E-N times two.
And I didn't know that was Mubi. That looks pretty interesting, actually.
Yeah. It's from emerging French filmmaker Rachel Lang, and it was acquired out of Berlin this year, and they've had some great coverage about it. It's currently playing New York at the Anthology Film Archives and L.A. at the Arena Cine Lounge. And then, after its theatrical run, it will be coming to Mubi. So, you can either go out and see it now if you're in one of those two cities, or, again, get your free trial of Mubi by going to mubi.com/filmstage, and you'll be able to see it there. All right, so we're going to start off with our mini-review of Moana. This is the newest Disney film. It is directed by, apparently, four people. Ron Clements, Don Hall, John Musker, and Chris Williams. And it stars the vocal talents of one Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And, oh, I did not practice enough. I did not practice enough on this name. And I immediately apologize before I even try it. Aluli Carvalho.
I don't think that was that bad, actually.
All right, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, and so I honestly don't know what the plot summary for this film is. So I'm just... Nice. What are you laughing about, Bill? The trailers have been very oblique. There's like a girl on a ship, and there's a guy who appears to be a demigod. And I guess they're going to save something. Here is the trailer.
For generations, this peaceful island has been home to our family. But beyond our reef, a great danger is coming. Legend tells of a hero who will journey to find the demigod Maui. And together, they will save us all.
All right, so that's the trailer for Moana, a trailer that I've never seen before, because that trailer actually tells you what the story is. I'm used to the trailers that come on before movies where it's just like, hi, I'm Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and I want you to see Moana, and then it's just like a hit reel of his character doing loopy stuff.
Where are you seeing these trailers?
Yeah, that's AMC and Regal. I don't know.
Oh. I'm sorry for that.
Yeah, it sucks. Anyway, I didn't have a chance to go out and see Moana this weekend.
Yes, you didn't have a chance. Okay.
I didn't. I had time to see one movie, and I asked both of you assholes, should I see Allied or Moana? And you both, without hesitation, said Allied.
So you're going to tell me that you would have seen Moana if you had the time?
If when I asked that question, you had said, don't see Allied, you should see Moana so we can talk about Moana, I would have said, fine, I'll bite the bullet. I'll go see Moana.
Yeah, no, there it is. That's what I was looking for. Yep,
bite Guys, the bullet. I go and see movies that I don't want to see all the time. I asked the two people here who were able to see these movies in advance, or at least one of them in advance, which one would be a better discussion? And you said Allied. I'm not getting into this. This is not my fault. I gave you the option, and you told me to see Allied. So
that's fine. This is fine.
Let's let you two assholes talk about Moana, the newest film from Disney. What did you think of it? Let's start with Michael Snydell.
Well, I guess I should do a little bit more with the plot. I guess booming trailer described. There is kind of, this is about a young woman named Moana, who is the daughter of the chief. So, so she is next in line to become the chief of a village. Do you remember the name of the village by any chance, Bill?
I do not remember the name of the village off the top of my head now.
anyways, so it is kind of it follows a very traditional path in terms of her having, you know, kind of a crisis of self-confidence about what she should do and what she wants to be. So a big part of her character is just that while she feels some obligation and duty to her village, she also has this wayward adventurous spirit. And I don't want to go too into it because I guess it's probably spoilers, but something happens on the island that requires her to leave the village and search out for Maui, who is played by The Rock, and he is a rambunctious, arrogant, hammer-headed demigod who you know, she needs to solve this problem. Again, I'm being very vague because I feel like this gets into spoilery stuff. Bill, do you think I covered the plot okay here? Do you think I should get into more?
Yeah, so far so good.
Okay, so my opinion is I'm mixed to, but definitely more positive on this. I think the thing about this film is that I really enjoyed this, but I really had an experience where I just wanted something more out of it at every turn. It's gorgeous. It has, you know, these very evocative visuals and set pieces. There's one that it feels almost like a naval Fury Road. That's just great.
Yeah.
And you know, as someone who's kind of a Hamilton hater, I found the play incredibly corny. I have been humming these tunes to myself for the past like 2 weeks. And you know, I think the characters are very memorable. I think the songs are very memorable. I think the script in this is really frustrating, though. It's a little bit similar feelings I had to Kubo, although I think Kubo's probably a little more creative when it comes to overall mythology stuff. But I think the thing about it is, you know, this is the Disney – it is like slightly the Disney princess archetype, but then – It doesn't fall into any of the easy traps of her being a damsel. It doesn't. It allows this character to have her own agency and to improve on her own and to be a hero. And I think both The Rock and Carvalho do really good character work. It's just I just wish this movie didn't follow every expected Disney beat to a T. Because I just think it has the possibility to be something great. And the other last thing I want to say is a lot of the comedy here falls unusually flat, even compared to something like Zootopia, which I was very mixed about. I thought the comedy worked a lot better in this. This is a lot heavier on bathroom humor than I was expecting. And especially like an animal sidekick that is even more one note than usual. So just I sometimes feel like this is a first draft and I wish it would just go further. But I've rambled on and I think this is worth a watch. I just wish it was something more. What'd you think, Bill?
So I really enjoyed it, but I definitely have to agree with a lot of your kind of critiques and criticisms. It's weird because this movie runs about 113 minutes and that is long. It is long.
For a children's movie, yeah, that's actually pretty long. Yeah. It's almost 2 hours.
Yeah. And so it's interesting because the film both feels long, it feels its length, and yet by the finale, it feels incredibly short. It feels like it was pushed very, very quickly to just kind of have an ending. And I don't know if they really quite came up with an ending that's satisfying. The finale is great, but like the actual ending and the way they wrap up the story is kind of it's very, very quick. It feels very heavy handed. It feels rushed. And I thought I thought overall it was absolutely gorgeous. This film just like everywhere it looks, and this is one of the few animation films where they're inviting you to look into the background and look at you know, everything around the characters, and you know, they're climbing up mountains in islands, and so it's overlooking the ocean at all these different points, and so it is absolutely beautiful. And I really enjoyed the music. The music is so, so good. Jermaine,
I listened to your welcome so many times.
I think Jermaine Clement really, really steals the show. He plays a crab that has started to use his giant back kind of shell and collect shiny things that attracts fish, and then he just eats the fish up. And he's just kind of this very, very sassy crab, and he's hilarious. And I like his character because he plays it straight, and the film plays him very much as a villain that actually is somewhat intelligent, that will literally say things out loud that are kind of developments of the film. You know, he'll be like, "Well, I got misled there. Okay." And, you know, he says exactly what's happening. So it's kind of hilarious, the way they kind of, mess with that character. But yeah, the, Alan Tudyk, I guess, apparently plays Hee-Hee, who is, Moana's pet rooster, which is just very, very one note. The rooster, the fact that the rooster and not the pig is the one that accompanies her. I was really like, oh man, what are they doing? Why is it not the pig? Like, I love the pig, and they chose the fucking rooster instead. But
worst misdirection ever.
Yeah. So I guess the rooster is described by director Ron Clements as the dumbest character in the history of Disney animation. So they clearly know what they're doing. Yeah.
But they usually do, like Disney especially. I mean, you can count on them on making those characters at least more more complex, even in their joke types. Like, to jump to even something as recent as like Sven in Frozen. Like, that, I think Sven is a lot more interesting because they use his kind of droopy expressions. And the problem with Hey-Hey is like Hey-Hey has one very simple loop of animations. Like, it's not like he reacts differently to things.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is funny because they literally put Hee-Hee to the side at several points. It's almost like the animators were just like, "Hey, I don't want to animate this rooster anymore. Like, can we just hide the rooster?" "Yeah, yeah, sure, we can hide the rooster." "Okay, cool, thanks." You know, like yeah, that rooster just needs to go. But yeah, there's a couple of set pieces that are really, really cool. The Rock, I guess he actually sings, and he's not a bad singer. I've never heard him sing before in my life. I've seen him in a lot of things. He's not that bad. And his song definitely is a centerpiece song, and it really, really is catchy, and it's a lot of fun. I love the way that he is animated. The film kind of got some criticism early on when production photos or production stills, I guess, of his character like came out, and people were like, "Oh, you're just making like a chubby Samoan dude." And it's like, no, he's actually like he's actually just big, and that's just kind of his nature. Like, he doesn't look fat. Like, at no point do they kind of like make him look fat. Yeah, he doesn't jiggle. He's like solid muscle, but he's just a really big, imposing dude.
Sort of like The Rock.
Yeah, sort of like The Rock. And so I love the way that he looks. I love I love that the tattoos that he has actually have like a story behind them. Like all of the tattoos on him have a story. And so I think that's a really, really beautiful way to kind of introduce it. As a crash course into, I guess, Polynesian mythology, this is really, really interesting and unique. There are several moments where they speak in a language that I hesitate to call it Polynesian. I'm not sure what the language is, but it's definitely not subtitled at several moments and things like that. And I think all of that just benefits it so much. It gives it this island flair that really, you know, we haven't seen kind of embrace fully. We've seen the Pocahontases, we've seen the Aladdins and things like that that are set in a different, you know, non-traditional country, aka sure. Not America.
I was about to say Pocahontas is in America.
Yeah. Well, but in a...
It's a peek into a different culture, though.
Yeah,
a culture. And this one, where those felt like kind of towing little, you know, toes in the water kind of feel, this feels like, no, we are jumping in and, you know, we are really embracing the culture and everything like that. So I think it's really beautiful in that way. But
more so than Lava?
Oh, don't give me shit about Lava. I love Lava.
I like Lava. I'm joking with my heart.
Okay. Yeah, no, Lava's a travesty.
Oh, fuck you. Right. Lava's great.
I will say there is a short before, and I don't want to derail too much. I'll wrap up my comments here in a little bit, but there's a short before this that is really, really interesting. I think at the heart of this film is a story, and I don't think we quite sold it all that well. But basically, the princess has just this kind of calling to go beyond the coral reefs that kind of surround this small little secluded island. And really, like all of that, the chief, her father, is basically forbidding her to go beyond that. None of the island residents go beyond it. And it's just kind of her calling. And that's where the adventure starts, is her leaving the island. And the way that is kind of wrapped up, the way that kind of is told, that story is really, really beautiful and interesting. I was really, really happy for that. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Bo. I'm sorry.
But the short ahead of it is also kind of, it details a little bit of that, where it's kind of like a follow your heart kind of short. And I really, really enjoyed the animation and the way that kind of played out. It was a good, rarely do these films and the shorts have like anything kind of in common. Usually they're decidedly different, right? This one actually had a lot in common with the actual themes of the film itself. So I thought it was interesting the way they kind of played into each other. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, no, I didn't like the short, but I do want to, I guess just add on briefly to what you were saying is like, yeah, I guess I did do a disservice to this not bringing in the sense of like, you know, as much as I don't like how the plot actually like moves forward and how awkward like the main beats are, like I do think the way that this village is depicted and the way that the coral reef, like all of these, this ingrained mythology and ingrained cultural aspects, like they all come into the main plot. And I really think that's fantastic. I just wish I couldn't predict every time a major thing was going to happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's why I just feel so conflicted about this one.
Yeah, and I think its length part of that is the length doesn't help it. Like if it was a little bit shorter, maybe it was a little bit more kind of on the rails, it wouldn't feel as kind of grating. But yeah, it does feel very much on the rails, and at a certain point you're kind of like, okay, I definitely know where the story is going, why can't we get there faster?
Sure.
But just the same, I think they never give short shrift to any of the songs, and I think that's part of it. I think more than likely they probably had all of these songs that they had been put together by Lin-Manuel Miranda, and they were just like, okay, we have to sell this up. We have to add pretty much everything that he does, and, you know, really drag it out. And that's both to the benefit, because like me and Michael have both mentioned, the songs are fantastic, but it's also like, okay, but the film itself, I feel like the story is a little, it's a little safe. But I did find it interesting that the daughter is very much set up to be the village chief, and there's no mention of like, oh, she's going to be like a queen, or she's going to be like something lesser than like an actual king. No, they just like, the father is straight up like, yeah, you're going to be the village chief. And I was like, that's interesting. I thought most chiefs had to be male, and they just roll right through that. They never touch on it. They never really like bring it up. And I thought that was so well played, when so many of these films would have a lot of discussion about that. And I'm not sure if that's necessarily
like Mulan, for instance.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's necessarily...
That was a massive plot point in Mulan, like that gender dynamic.
But I'm not sure if this is a Polynesian thing, if that's just kind of their culture, if they have female chiefs that are just like, yeah, I'm a chief and I happen to be a female, or if that's just something that they're just kind of playing fast and loose for the film. Of course, like, this film, it doesn't take place like in Hawaii or anything like that. It takes place in kind of a mythical place, because we don't ever get an idea of when this is taking place, but there's no cell phones. There's nothing, like, there's no technology. This is very much like an island culture. And so it's interesting, because you don't quite know if this is stuff that is like, is this a, you know, current? Is this in the 1800s? Is this what? And it's just like, okay, we're going with it. So I really appreciated that. So,
yeah, I'd definitely be interested to see if there was anybody who wrote kind of a deep dive into Polynesian culture and, you know, how much it reflects it.
I'm sure that we can look forward to that from some media outlet, maybe Slate in the comments.
Oh.
So that's the end of our Moana section. I wanna play us out.
All right.
Yeah, hella cruel.
A long, long time ago, there was a volcano living all alone in the middle of the sea. He sat high above his bed, watching all the couples play and wishing that he had someone too. And from his lover came this song of hope that he sang out loud every day for years and years.
Are we all gonna sing along?
I have a dream I hope will come true, that you're here with me and I'm here with you. I wish that the earth, sea, the sky up above will send me someone to love.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love. Mike, how you doing? All right. Well, that's the perfect way to end our Moana section. Now we can move into our main review, which is Allied. This will have both the mini review up front and then the spoilers on the back. And this movie is directed by Robert Zemeckis, written by Stephen Knight, who has done Eastern Promises and Locke. And it stars Brad Pitt, Marion Cotillard, and the inimitable Jared Harris. Here, now, for your listening pleasure, is the trailer.
Take the couch.
You'll sleep on the roof. In Casablanca, that's where husbands go.
They're watching us.
Now kiss me.
Said you were beautiful and good.
So that is the trailer for Allied. The story of this film, or I guess the plot, I should say, is that Brad Pitt is a Canadian airman who goes behind enemy lines in the early years of World War II. And teams up with Marion Cotillard's French resistance fighter to help assassinate the Nazi diplomat to Casablanca. They fall in love and go back to London, where they start raising a family, until the day that Brad Pitt is told that his wife may actually be a German spy. And then that is where the main conflict comes from. So, let's talk about this film, see what we thought about it. See,
Brian, you go first.
All right. I was really looking forward to this film. I like Brad Pitt. Love me some Brad Pitt. Marion Cotillard is great. I'm a fan of Robert Zemeckis. I'll take any opportunity to say, like, oh my god, Flight was great. And you know, there's something about a film that takes place in World War II that doesn't involve like a massive battle or goes into some of, like, the espionage. I'm a fan of The Americans. Anything that involves spies and a married couple, and the spycraft of a time before, like, hacking became a thing, and people had to, like, do dead drops and have code words and little, like, one-time keypads and ciphers is all great to me. So I was looking forward to this, and I went and watched it, and I was deeply disappointed. This movie is oddly inert, and it's very easy to begin poking holes in once you kind of get to the end of it. So a lot of my issues are going to be wound up in the spoiler section. So I'll try to suffice to say that I think the first act is pretty great. Everything in Casablanca I really enjoyed. That has some of the, like, the trade craft that I'm looking for. And yeah, I don't know. After that point, when it gets back to London, I mean, it doesn't feel like it's building enough on the relationships that it built in Casablanca. And then it just kind of lays there as it moves towards an ending. And I was expecting this movie to be sort of an examination of married life and, like, necessary lies, and it's basically like The Americans. The Americans is about two people who are married as a cover, whose marriage becomes real insofar as they start falling in love with each other, but they're still out doing operations and stuff. And so there's the question of, like, which lies am I telling for my job? Which lies am I telling for you as part of any normal marriage? And then which lies am I telling for my own self? And this movie, on the other hand, is just like, it just kind of starts moving forward without really tying anything to any of the emotions that it's tried to build. And so at the end, it was just really deeply disappointing. And I wasn't entirely bored during all of it, but I did constantly ask myself, why is most of what's happening right now happening? And that's a really weird question to be asking yourself during a movie that can't seem to decide whether it wants to run on plot or emotion, and then fails to really deliver on either. So, in general, my thoughts on Allied are a fairly strong beginning that then just kind of gives itself over to a complete and utter non-story in the last half. Bill Graham, what did you think?
So this film, look, Marion Cotillard and Brad Pitt, I could watch them pretty much in anything. I really enjoyed their performances in this film. Even as much as Brad Pitt is kind of a sleepy character, they work that kind of into the film itself. At one point, Marion Cotillard's character, what should I call her? Her name is
Marianne
Beauséjour. Beauséjour.
And Brad Pitt is Max Vatan.
There's two things that I think are really crucial early on. One, she calls out his bad French accent, which I think is hilarious because he does kind of have not a great French accent.
She calls out
especially
his bad Parisian accent, saying that he sounds
Quebec. Sounds like Canada.
Quebec. Yeah. And which he later reveals, yes, I am from Canada. Like, thank you. Thank you for
Montreal,
noticing.
Not Quebec.
Yeah. The other thing is that she also calls him out for, like, while they're spies in Casablanca, he's supposed to not be like the big party person. And when they start living together, she is like, oh, that wasn't actually a cover. That's just kind of, you don't like parties. And it's just like, I think in social situations, he says maybe all of 30 words. I don't like he's pretty quiet in pretty much every big social situation that they find themselves in. It is her talking. And I thought that was smart because A, his accent isn't all that good, but B, it's like, I guess he's kind of the eyes, right? He's supposed to, if both of them aren't going to be the kind of flamboyant and rambunctious people, then maybe one needs to be the eyes, one needs to be the mouth, right? So I think it works well in that way. But let me be very frank. This film is set in Casablanca. That's a huge fucking mistake. This film does not need to take place in Casablanca because the whole time, every time they mention Casablanca, I was like, oh, I remember that movie. Oh. And it's just like, guys, the romance at the heart of this film really does not work for me. And look, these are two very beautiful people. And Cotillard is really the one that's kind of selling it the most, I feel, as far as the acting. And I think part of that kind of pulls into her character itself. But she's definitely the one that seems to be interested. But honestly, the way that he asks her to marry him, I was just like, wait, now? Like, this is real? At first I thought, oh, this is another mission that they're about to go on. And no, it's the mission of their life. I was just
the mission of their life.
I wish that's what this was called.
Yeah. I was just like, oh, okay, so this is actually happening and this is real. And it's funny because when they get married, one of the first scenes that you see them is at a bar table, and they are separated by like four or five people. They're sitting at like the heads of the table, and they're just looking at each other. And I was like, that's like the perfect summation of this entire fucking movie, is like, oh, yeah, they look good. Yeah. But they're like a table's like room apart from each other. And it's like, yeah, not really feeling this connection right now. So I thought the romance at the heart of it is just lacking enough to where they really, and I'm not sure what they can do to make punch it up or do anything more except like have them spend a little bit more time with each other, I guess. And not as spies about to like go into this very life endangering mission that they're kind of like shooting like pot shots at each other. Like they're kind of calling each other out on in their spycraft and things like that. And it's like, okay, so I guess maybe that can be seen as flirty, but to me it seemed very much like, hey, I need you to get your shit together because this is very dangerous. And so I just felt like really this film desperately wants to be a love story in the middle of kind of this spy film. And like you're saying, Brian, like the Americans really, really sells that up. And they do such a good job of like laying the groundwork where, you know, at first you just think it's just this happy couple that happen to be spies and they're married to each other. And then you start to realize, no, they were literally married to each other in the name of being spies, and then slowly started to kind of fall for each other. And this film does it, you know, a little bit differently. I mean, I guess in a way it does it that exact same way, but they don't spend the time to make that affecting.
Yeah, like there's not enough like yeah. love and romance at the edges of their mission. The movie, I think, could have, and I say this with great trepidation, it could have benefited from being longer, so that we had more time to work on the stuff that's happening outside of the kind of clockwork plot it's trying to do, because mm-hmm. we really do need those more human moments to sell that stuff, and we don't really get them. But Michael Snydell, what did you think of Allied?
Take a drink. I disagree with Brian.
Oh my God. Top 10 material, you know, right?
No. This isn't top 10 material. This is top 20 material. But yeah, this is the most fun I've had at a big movie this year, honestly. So I guess what I should say about it is, like, I was in for this ride, you know, 10, 20 minutes in, and I like how dumb the dialogue is in this. I like how it doesn't really, it's not really interested in them talking to each other. And so I guess what I can say about this is the reasons why I like this so much absolutely have to go back to Robert Zemeckis and the way that he crafts this entire movie and how he's not really interested in the interconnected nature of being in a relationship, or how people talk to each other, or whether that intimacy is real or not. And yes, that is absolutely how the movie is presented. But I like that so much of this movie is just the ambiguity of suspicion and whether it's even founded in the first place. And not how that goes into their relationship, but just even whether just watching that, just watching these two characters just kind of do things where you're questioning their intentions, and the camera is constantly underlining that, whether it's, you know, shots in the mirror where Marion Cotillard is either maybe reaching for a lamp or maybe reaching for something else. And there's so many misdirection scenes here. And I was with it the whole time. And yes, their relationship is not, I didn't find it particularly convincing, but I was so entertained by just how both of the two were playing into and against type. Like I was honestly thinking a lot about Gone Girl while I was watching this, in the sense of just like, especially Marianne Cotillard, someone who, when she's placed in American movies, she just always sounds kind of awkward, and kind of there's a little touch of like subversion and insidiousness in every line of dialogue, and Brad Pitt just kind of like
handsome,
blandly handsome, Yeah, blandly handsome, just quiet, silent type. Like, just the way that the movie takes those two archetypes and then just builds a surrounding series of set pieces and interesting characters around them. Honestly, I was there for the whole thing. And yeah, we can obviously talk about it because I talk about in spoilers. Because, yeah, I definitely think that there's a prioritization of one particular perspective in this movie, and it's potentially a problem. But honestly, I like to how this gets across too, that maybe these two aren't perfect for each other, but also there's a desperation of the time they're living in. Yeah, they have a party at one point where people are literally just like having sex in the closet, and like like it's just like it's a view of war that is, you're right, not about big battles or anything, but like at any point shit could go belly up. And I like that the whole movie has this blazing earnesty, but also a hint of like subversion and goofiness. I talked to Jordan, our benevolent lord and master, and I thought he had a great thing. He had a great statement when he said, Pitt and Cotillard are acting like they're in a serious drama. And everyone else, from the director to the supporting actors and actresses, shout out to Lizzie Kaplan in a bizarre.
Yes. Yeah, what the fuck?
But everyone else is in a cartoon. And I think that dissonance is what makes it work here. So I think
disagree.
That the craftsmanship is so smart here. And I was so interested in just watching the story just kind of keep doing these red herrings that I honestly didn't care that we weren't going to get that interpersonal stuff. So yeah, this is a fun movie.
Even what you're saying isn't like there in a really fun or meaningful way to me. Like I loved the scene where you saw her hand reach out and you're like, oh, is she going to look at this thing? But instead she just turns off a lamp. Like, I wanted more of that, and I would have loved more of like the world around them being like more of a cartoon, and him mm-hmm. having to like wrestle with that inherent absurdity while he's got this major problem going on. But like, it's not there. It's not playing it up enough for it to feel like there's a tension there.
I want to wait till spoilers to talk about that. I'm sorry.
You make this movie sound super interesting, but to me, watching it, there was like an inherent lack of tension in what should be one of the most tense situations possible. Like, you've got the Blitz going on, you've got everyone going crazy. Lizzie Kaplan's character in this is so like, I want a movie about her. That would be interesting to me. Like, she's just obviously like having a time of her life because the Blitz is happening and everyone's like, whatever, man. And so she's in this happy spot where she's like, I can just be a lesbian now. You know, and this is at a time when what's his face? The guy who they made the movie about, Alan Turing, you know, would eventually become imprisoned and chemically castrated for his homosexuality. And she's like, the Blitz is on, so no one gives a shit.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, there's just like, I don't know. We have to get into spoilers.
I want to mention that the Blitz and the way they kind of I've heard a lot of people wonder why the fuck Zemeckis is making this movie, because typically lately his film kind of credentials have been big blockbuster cinema, kind of special effects driven films, and I'm really curious about how much of this was actually shot on screen and how much of this was green screen backdrops and things like that, because I really think there's probably a lot of special effects that are going on in this film that people don't quite realize. The budget is $85 million, and I understand like if everything was set in Paris and in hello, you still got me?
Okay, we're back after some technical difficulties knocked us out. Apologies to everyone. It's been just as hard on us as it has been on you. Quick author's note, I guess. I'm not going to be able to use headphones from now on. So the patch that I did on the audio recording software and everything seems to be working now, but I apologize if there is a little bit of reverb when I speak. I will do everything in my power to make sure that by the next time we record that is gone. Also, there is a baby asleep in the room next door, so if I'm not as exuberant as I usually am, it's because I don't want to wake the night demon. So, that being said, Bill Graham, when last we spoke, lo those many hours ago, it's been about 7 hours now, you were saying that there were technical aspects to this film that you believe drew in Robert Zemeckis, because though this is not an action-packed, thrill-a-minute movie with a beach landing scene and everything like we saw in Hacksaw Ridge, this movie does evoke the period through the Blitz and through a sandstorm and through a lot of other things.
Yeah, and like the Blitzkrieg, I think we mentioned it loosely a little bit, but like there are several sequences when right in the middle of some big dramatic sequence, and I won't give away one in particular, but there's a couple of sequences where they're just looking up into the sky, and all of a sudden, like, yeah, there's flak, and there's the gun anti-aircraft is going off as these planes are like flying very low in the sky, and it's pretty incredible to kind of and I mean, obviously this isn't real, this is obviously a case of green screen, but the effect that it gives to the film itself, it kind of brings up, I think it was Michael that was mentioning how, you know, there's just this kind of live by day, live by night kind of feel to the film, where everybody's just like running around and doing anything and everything that they want, and kind of, you know, because I mean, you may die tomorrow, you may die in the next 5 minutes, who knows what's going to happen. And there's just kind of an immediacy to the film. But I think when they transform Paris, I'm curious where they actually shot it. And, you know, I could cheat and look up and figure out where they actually shot it, but I imagine that they had to use green screen to fill in locations and fill in some of the surrounding areas. They may have been able to put a facade in some locations, but I'm sure a lot of times when they pull back, they had to use green screen at various points to make sure, oh crap, there's an Audi in the picture. Like, we need to get that out of there. You know, like there's a lot of production stuff that we more than likely do not see.
Right. Bill, beyond the logistics, does that factor in as it feels fraudulent to you? Or, I mean, no. I agree this is a very interesting point to talk about, but I'm just curious, did you particularly feel that sense of inauthenticity then?
No, because I honestly, like, this all of this film feels, it never really feels like it's trying to be a period piece, as weird as that
sure.
seems. And I'm not sure what the quality, like, A, what that says about the film, and B, what that quality is that makes me just kind of look at things and say, yeah, that's probably fake, but whatever. Like I just don't care. And it's not because the film is necessarily bad or good or anything like that. It's just, for whatever reason, just the way it's filmed, the way it's shot, just never really makes me want to be like, oh, well, that's out of time. You know, that's not at the right place, or that's not at the right time. And it's like, I really don't care to read into this film that much. And so it just becomes kind of a showcase film in that way, where it's more dedicated to the story it's trying to tell than the actual kind of visuals and things like that, even though some of the visuals are pretty good.
I think this movie does a very good job of working with its visuals to be low-key.
Mm-hmm.
Every action scene and everything that they do, it's fine. It's the type of thing that only someone like Zemeckis, who realizes that technology is better as an enhancement than as a set piece unto itself, as odd as that is to say for a man whose last film recreated the Twin Towers, like, he never makes it just about, ooh, look what I can do. It always has to say something about the emotion in the story. As fine as that is, it's just like, it doesn't work towards making this film any more tense or thrilling or even really engaging, which to me is all the worse because it's so effective on the technology side.
Sure. Yeah. It reveals some of the things that, you know, you're not in awe by certain things. And so that kind of uncovers a lot more of the story. It uncovers a lot more of what's actually going on screen. And so you're able to focus. So
are we ready to get into spoilers? Speaking of.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, sure.
All right. So all in all, I don't know. I was really disappointed by this film, and I don't think I would invite people to go see it in the theater. Maybe like when it hits HBO, you could take a look if you're interested. But in general, I didn't feel much for this. Bill Graham, where do you come down on that?
As far as what?
As far as do you think people would go see this?
You know, there's so many other films out here right now. unless you're just dying to see someone you recognize, let me say this. Is this a good use of these two people's star power? I don't think so.
I honestly don't think so, no.
No. Is it an entertaining film? Yes.
No.
Is it I think it is, but I think it's slight. I think its entertainment is very much on the surface. I can't really recommend this film to anyone unless they just need their star power in their life. And you know, look, it's the end of November. Some people just want to see Brad Pitt and Marion could, I almost said Angelina Jolie. some people just want to see Brad Pitt and Marion Cotillard up on the big screen. And I can't fault them for that. So,
all right, Michael Snydell, what about you?
I think you guys are. I don't think this is a great film by any stretch of the imagination, and I hope I didn't bring that out. But this is honestly some of the most fun I had in a theater this year, and I think there are more interesting things. I think we can specifically talk about the star power here because I don't think it works, or excuse me, I don't think it functions. Or its pleasures are related to just seeing stars on screen. I think there's more interesting contrast and clashing going on here. But let's get into that in spoilers. But yes, I do think this is worth people's time.
Okay. So I guess, you know, just to rip the Band-Aid off, she is, in fact, a German spy. The real Marianne died in France a while ago. And Marion Cotillard... character, who we never find out what her original name was, went to French Morocco and assumed her identity as a means of, I guess, doing what she's doing now, which is handing over secrets out of London.
Yeah, it's not quite clear on that because it almost seems like she was trying to run away, but all of that gets very confused because everything falls into place in the last like 5 minutes of this film, and you get a very hurried description of like what was actually going on. And right. I think
a lot of my problems with the movie come from that description because like everything hinges on the fact that first of all, Brad Pitt does like 4 really dangerous or stupid things.
Yes,
over the course of this weekend to try to like prove that she is who she says she is.
Yeah, so we should set it up, or I mean, I don't know who's a spoilers section for, if not people that have actually watched the movie, some people may not and just go ahead and go into the spoilers, right, so let me run
through what was being done. So when Brad Pitt is told that his wife may be a spy, they say, we're going to do a blue dye test on her, which is, this is something we see in like every spy film. We're going to give you fake information. You're going to be the only person who has it. And if we find it in transcripts that we get from intercepted German intelligence, we will know that your wife has been has been handing it over to the Germans. Super simple. They say, we're going to give it to you tonight, which is Friday night, and then Monday is when we get all of our transcript intercepts translations. So all we need is for you to answer the phone, write down this information somewhere she'll see it, and then just keep her at your house or like in the area until Monday. And then if it turns out that she is, we just need you to kill her to prove your loyalty, which is like a dynamite premise for a movie, because you'd think that he would just be like in the house, stressed out, wondering who this woman was and like seeing everything in a new light. But instead, he starts like really going out there and trying to find this like information about her. He speaks to someone who's in a hospital whose eyes are ruined, so unfortunately he can't see a photograph.
As Bill and I were talking about.
A complete and utter fucking waste of Matthew Good. Like they could have had anybody in this role, because this character's not seen in full. Like, he doesn't even have an effective role, but it's like it's a scare tactic. It's like he turns and you're like, ooh. And it's like, okay. Yeah, it's like, okay, so why did you use Matthew Good, one of the most handsome men in Hollywood, and just
he's
like
such a fucking great actor too.
Yeah, like this is such a bit role for him, and it's just like
so weird.
Why was he just around? They were like, we can use him.
So it's a waste of Matthew Good in a wasted like moment in the film. And then he goes, because Matthew Good tells him, oh, like, De La Mar is still active in this place that we go in France. So he's like, okay, De La Mar knows who my wife is, even though, like, we never heard who De La Mar was before. And so he then goes and he's like, hey, let me find the pilot who's going to be flying items to the resistance. And he says, I need you to give this photograph to him and just get a yes or no answer as to, like, to the question on the back that I've written in French. And then the kid is like murdered on the ground in France because he's waiting. And at a party, his friend, played by Jared Harris, shows up and says, you went to a hospital and like just like agitated this guy to the point that he's been like re-injured. And then you got this poor pilot killed. Like, just stop and wait until Monday. And Brad Pitt's like, okay, boss, sure. First, let me track down this weird looking old guy with a pipe that I've seen twice. And then he goes and he flies to France and has to break into a jail.
No, he knows the pipe guy.
No, he doesn't.
It's established that he knows him previously. If we're talking about the drunk guy.
We're talking about the guy at the party.
The pipe guy is the guy at the party.
Oh, okay. Who looks like Freud. Yeah.
Yeah. He assaults Freud. And then he flies to France and he has to go to a jail and fight a tank to like get more information about his wife. And then he finally comes home and like, I guess an hour before like the Section V people were going to tell him, hey, we found your wife's information in the transcripts. She's a spy. He like has to take her out of the home that they share together, break into a bar, and then ask her to play the piano, and she can't. And she's like, you know, I'm not the woman that I thought that you thought I was. I heard a story about her, blah blah blah. And then she says, like, I thought they wouldn't find me here. Like, they threatened our daughter. So she is indeed an imposter. Everything that Section V said about the ambassador assassination being a setup was true. But when she, like, I guess the power of love changed her mind and she wasn't going to do it while she was in London.
Yeah.
But then
I guess,
then
I guess
they had her and daughter because they have the worst babysitter on earth who happens to be a German spy.
So there's two things that are kind of crucial that are going on that I think are easy to kind of, well, I say easy, but I mean, they kind of really hammer it home, but they were subtle enough to the point where I enjoyed the potential aspect that they didn't quite like mine. And they kind of would. Let me knock out two of them real quick. Okay. So the first one is basically the idea that this woman who Marion Cotillard is playing, that she's made it very clear that like emotion is her power, right? Like, to get invested, to feel invested, is how she kind of plays and is a spy and is a good spy. We learn this kind of after the fact that, well, maybe she wasn't a spy. I don't know. Whatever the hell is going on in this film.
Well, yeah, she says in Casablanca, she says, you know, the emotion is real and that's how I do this. Like, that's the part that I make real so that I can fake everything else.
And so, like, they play that up kind of all over the place, but and they do a good job of him kind of starting to wonder, okay, like, if I ask you if you love me and you break down and you cry and you tell me yes, what am I supposed to, like, what am I supposed to do with that? Like, you're a spy. You've already admitted to me that emotion is your kind of key, is your like special superhero power, right? It's like, okay, so that's your spy shit. That's what you're really good at. And now I'm asking you if you love me and you're saying yes. So like, A, that doesn't do anything for me, right? Like, but as soon as she says yes, he's like, cool, we have an hour. Let's get this stuff. And you're just like, okay, so
let's go murder the two people who were part of your circuit.
Yeah.
And then they get to an airfield.
And then run away.
Right. And then run away.
He gets to an airfield where they just let him and his wife and his infant daughter in. And then he has just enough trouble starting the plane that Jared Harris can roll his car under it and disable it.
That was pretty spectacular. That whole
sequence.
That was an
effective scene, but I was like, I couldn't wrap my head around what was fucking happening, because it was like,
I would have like, if I'm her in that seat, in that seat, I'm like, hey, Brad, go to the other plane. See if that one starts. like, why are you jacking with this one? This one clearly does not want to work for you today.
Yeah. Why did you choose this one? Why are you so tied to this plane? But like,
cause he's there for a good, like 5 or 10 minutes. And you're just like, okay, this is kind of maddening. Like, I thought this is just maybe how like all the planes start, but no, it's like, this one is just like, nah, I'm not into it. Like, see, like, it's raining, dude. Like, what are you trying to do?
All of this would make more sense to me if she was like trying to get out and like wanted to, like, I just don't know what her deal is, I guess, because they made
this movie's made to infuriate you. I just realized that, Brett. And the more you guys talk about it, I'm just realizing like that this movie's made to infuriate both of you, because it doesn't give a shit about any of this logic at all.
There's no logic.
It's a stupid fucking movie.
He should have just waited for Monday. It's like, at first it seemed like he was trying to like just get ahead of it and be like, look, I'm just gonna prove immediately that she's not who you think she is, and all this is
which is exactly what they told him not to do, right? It's just like don't interfere with it, because at one point you wonder if Lizzie Kaplan's sister his sister is kind of involved. Yeah, her lover is involved, and you're like, okay, is someone, but no, it's like, it's very obvious if the information is coming from his desk, how would it leak out beyond her? So
he is like the worst like confidential person on earth, because like they're like, hey, we're gonna run a blue dye on your wife, don't do anything dumb, and then he goes out and does numerous dumb things, and that day like tells his sister that this is happening,
and who, it's just like, I guess,
and then like, and then it's like he's trying to prove that she's innocent, but like, if she was innocent, then nothing would happen.
Yes.
It's not like they've already decided that she is a spy and he just has to murder her, and he's like, no, I don't believe the intelligence you got, I'm gonna prove it. It's like, hey, we have a fucking foolproof way of knowing whether she is or not, and he's like, not good enough.
And
it's not
and
like he's like, trying to pack like enough love for a lifetime in these 3 days. It's not like he's really grappling with their relationship. He's just doing a lot of really stupid shit.
So what the timeline breaks for me a little bit, because what they do right in the middle of his crazy rambunctious weekend is they posit the idea. One of, I guess his other friend, like he's got multiple friends in the spy industry, and this to me was the key that they could have posited that would have drove him crazy, that would have given him a reason to do all this shit. But instead, he finds it out in the middle of it.
Yeah.
When he's already been doing this. So basically the idea is this other, I guess it's his direct superior or his office mate. I can't remember make heads or tails of who the hell this guy is. But anyways, he's in the same spy kind of unit. Right. And what he tells him is there's an opening for like leading the D-Day invasion, and
coordinating the French resistance for the D-Day invasion.
Yeah, and so they're looking for someone to lead that, and this potentially, or he says basically V-Section has a habit or a rumor of testing people in like dire situations, right? And just being like, okay, how would you handle the situation? And that is the perfect setup for him going crazy, right?
He's going
and him
crazy.
Doing all like sure. doing all of these things, but it happens out of order, and you're just like, wait, no, that's like a legitimate reason for him to be like, okay, maybe
dude,
they're
they
testing
want it to be
me.
Both and they want that to be they want that uncertainty to be like a foundational part of that as
but
well.
Because
they
comes,
want
it comes way too late for that, because it feels like.
No. It doesn't, though, because like we're supposed to think for a long time that it's only about this blue dye test. And then it's a possibility that, hey, maybe it's all bullshit. And that comes like near the end of the second act. And that's what I like so much about that. Like, it's just like it's like a thing that's supposed to not know that that's what happens. Like, you
I'm just saying
whether it's effective.
I'm saying no, it's not effective. Like, I understand what you were trying to say, but like, to have him already have gone to such lengths and then to do that, it's like
her.
There's no escalation from that point on, because he's already escalated it as much as he fucking can.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
I off the rails pretty early on. I mean, I'm kind of fine with that, honestly.
Like, if this movie had been like, okay, we're gonna run a blue dye test on your wife, and he's like, okay, I'm pissed off, but I accept that. And then he has to vacillate between like, okay, can I continue to love her for the 3 days I may have with her, or if I find out, like, will I not love her? Like, what about our daughter? If it had, like, grounded itself in a little bit of that, like, paranoia, and then he didn't do anything, but then this guy said, oh, P.S., there might fuck with you in a mind game, and then he started to go a little unhinged, or, like, if that guy had said that, and then he was like, huh, I wonder if that's what they're doing, and then he got a call from Jared Harris that was like, blue dye test came back, you gotta murder your wife, and he says, okay, that's exactly what this guy said would happen. I don't trust them. Like, if it were more paranoid.
Guys, that's not the Zemeckis version of this movie. Like, it's a fair criticism, but I'm just saying, like, that is not the movie we have
here. But what
here.
Is like, this movie? Like, this movie is, to me, inert and just, like, pointless. Because, like, my sister doesn't watch a lot of movies. It's really super easy to get one over on her. And I went and saw this with her. And as soon as the movie was over, she just turns to me and said, why didn't he just wait till Monday? Like, I would have waited till Monday.
My God.
And I had no answer for her, because his response is immediately awful.
No, why do you say, why don't you just wait till Monday? Because if it turns out she was a spy, he wanted to get her out. Like, that's pretty, that's...
No. Hold on. No, that is not his intention. His intention is never to find out if she is a spy, and if so, to take her out. His intention is to prove that she isn't a spy. That's his stance from the outset.
Of course, that's why he's pissed off because he's in denial.
Michael, I think that if you want that to be a turn, it has to come. Like later, like he has to be willing to let things shake out as they may, and then he has to make the choice. Like, no, I do love this woman, and if I can even get word of this an hour before they do, and have a chance of getting her out, that's what I'm gonna do. But like, there's no thing that makes him decide to disobey orders. Like after a point, like he just starts there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty immediate. Like as soon as he's left, I don't even think he makes it home. As soon as he leaves, he immediately goes out and tries to help. Doesn't he call her, right? And he says
no. That's,
hey,
he does go home that night. It's the next day when he goes out for like liquor and stuff that he starts doing things.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, he's pretty immediately like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do the opposite of everything those guys told me to do.
Yeah.
It's not like he's a good soldier who thinks he found another good soldier and now has to like break his bonds towards one or the other. It's not like he is a man who's in love, who's struggling with what that love means if it's founded on a lie. He's just Brad Pitt doing a bunch of random shit like to no immediate end and with no immediate purpose other than like knowing a couple days ahead of time. At first, it seems like he's just like, I'm going to show them. I'm going to prove this broad's who she says she is. And then when she breaks down after she can't play the piano, in like a reverse Phoenix, if we all remember mm-hmm. the movie Phoenix.
Sure.
Wonderful.
He's like, okay, let's try to get out of here. Let's go get the baby. I'll kill the nanny. I'll go kill the dude with the
pipe. Jeweler. Yeah. Did you guys not like the jeweler scene?
That's the thing, Mike. Like, I did like the jeweler scene. Like, weirdly enough, some of my favorite scenes are Marion Cotillard looking very nervous in a car.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Like, she pulled that off really well.
Like, the
really
jeweler
well.
Scene and then the plane starting scene. But, like, that's what I'm talking about. Like, that kind of...
The craft was all I needed for this. The logic was out the window in the first 5 minutes. Like, I was so fine and so... I was just, you know, completely in with their relationship. And that seems like the major thing, that everything is just going to collapse like, you know, a fucking game of Jenga. If you don't believe that there isn't a convincing romantic relationship there or the stakes that they go to for each other. I mean, I guess the whole movie kind of falls apart.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
like
it's
I
not
said,
like I can.
That's the problem. It doesn't, to me, set up enough of them and what he is meaning to accomplish. Like it's such a compelling premise, and like I would love for this to be like something I could sit next to Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy and watch them both.
That is
like,
not what Jesus. This, holy shit, that's not what this is.
Yeah, we know that now.
Yeah,
even on the terms of what it then became, it still to my eyes failed because it just wasn't fun. It wasn't interesting to sit through.
Yeah, if you're not gonna be Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, then you should have fun with it. And I feel like they tried, but they stumbled at crucial moments, and so it just never takes off for me. Did you want this film to be Mr. and Mrs. Smith?
Is that what you wanted?
No, I definitely did not
fun?
Want that.
I don't know about
that. What
do you
mean by more fun? I'm kind of curious what... I keep fucking saying curious. All right. I'm wondering what you guys mean. I, this is already such a cartoon, so I'm wondering what you guys wanted from it.
I guess if it was going to go this way, I would have loved more stuff like the weird French prison break. Because, like, you keep calling it a cartoon, but, like, there's two things where this guy just goes and talks to a guy that we never see again, and they're then told more about later. You know, it's like, that's not really compelling filmmaking.
Is Matthew Good, and what's the other one you're referring
the,
to?
The pilot, who's throwing up his guts.
Okay.
And he's like, I'm thinking of my mom. And then he's like, don't think of your mom. Think of your dad. He's proud of you. I'm like, you know, he could think about both parents. I'm sure they're both proud of him. Jeez.
Well, that guy should have been like, my dad's dead. And just been like, hey, ah, man.
Or
come
like
on.
Have more shit happen in the Blitz. Like, have them have to like outrun some bombs or some shit, you know?
They're at a party and a Blitz starts and everybody's just like looking up like it's fireworks. I mean, it's like,
yeah, that's pretty like,
I mean, it's
like
pretty
my
entertaining. And then the plane almost hits their fucking house.
One of my
that's
favorite
fine,
scenes
but
is,
it's like,
is
what
the
is
next
that?
Day. Is the next day they have a fucking picnic right in front of the damn thing, and you're just like, what is this movie? This movie, like, look, like it's those sequences that really, really highlight, like, I'm not trying to have Mr. and Mrs. Smith. But really, again, I think Michael, you're right. If the romance from the outset for you worked, then this film has an instant boost, right? But for sure. Me and Brian, it definitely didn't work.
But
so I
thing,
didn't
Bill,
feel
I mean like, for me at least the romance did work at the outset.
Oh it did. Okay.
Yeah, it's literally just everything after, hey man, your wife might be a spy, we're gonna run a blue dye test, and I'm like, okay, now here's where the paranoid thriller comes in. And it's like, no, let's it's like they actively chose to do all the least interesting things and at once also the most nonsensical things.
Yeah.
And their romance while they're in London, like, just didn't strike me as anything. It felt like all the love and passion from Casablanca, like, just died in those rainy English months.
What I'll say is, even, to poke some more holes, you know, even in my enjoyment of this film, is that, you know, I do think that as far as the ending goes, I don't think the film does a good job in actually offering two possibilities of what Cotillard is. I was a little bit disappointed with how much her character was not developed, even not just in them talking to each other, but I could have used more scenes where I could just understand a little bit more who she is. Because as I said, like, these set pieces and the very fast and efficient pacing for me got me through all of those like logic and issues and things like that. But I mean, I do think that this movie, I think a lot of my affection comes from a lot of things that you're bringing up, in the sense of that the structure is so strange, in the sense of the way that the first act is set, you know, in Casablanca. And like, and then as you're saying, like at the end of the first act, it's like, hey, let's start the movie now. Like, it's those things are what makes it so weird to me. And the fact that he'll be like, you know, he'll be like, oh, I can't make it because, you know, I'm going on a secret operation to find out whether you're a spy or not. Like there's times where he's going for errands. And it's like when he goes for errands, it seems like he's doing things that would take hours and hours and hours. Like, just the fact that this thing is so ridiculous at every turn. And I was just like, just feeling such glee in the theater about it.
I think this could have benefited from being more ridiculous. Like,
yeah.
Like,
I want it to go a little bit more absurd, but like, speaking of its absurdity, you're going to make a point, and
I'm going to do my patented Brian Rowan pitch as a different movie thing.
No,
I thought we've already done that though.
Well, no, I was half hoping would happen was that Brad Pitt was actually the spy.
Yeah, I was then, really, really hoping for that turn.
And
like, I was rooting for that.
And Jesus, I would have hated that.
It would have been. What my hope was that Brad Pitt was actually the spy, and he's like, "Uh oh, they found out," and they're like, and we know that it's your wife because she's actually not who she said she was. And so what he was doing was trying to prove who she was so that he could clear her and then, like, frame someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, she gets caught and then has to kill herself like she already does to protect him so he can keep fighting for the Reich. Like, yeah. That would have been the level of, like, weird cartoony nonsense that I could have gotten behind.
Yeah. Well, okay, so there's two things real quick. One behind-the-scenes thing is that Stephen Knight apparently, he quote-unquote, let me see here, he quote-unquote, damn it, he stated that the film would be based on a true story personally told to him at the age of 21.
Okay.
So that's the basis of this story, is a true story that was told to him. I remember reading early or seeing early advertisements or something like that that was said this is based on a true story.
Yeah, I remember that now too, now that you mention it.
There is no post credits like anything. It never says anything about who these fucking people were or anything like that. So I'm just like, okay, is this complete and utter bullshit? Like, I guess if it was a true story and he wasn't the spy, right? Okay, fine. I guess that's what you're doing. But then have the post credits like explanation of like what was actually happening, who actually did this, blah 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 blah. Like, who was she? What, like, why don't you have that if you're loosely based on a true story? But the other thing that I was really interested in, kind of noticed, and I don't know if y'all picked up on it, is so she's a former spy, right? And I guess as soon as she stopped doing spy shit, she became really sour about spy shit, because like every time he gets a call, she's like, oh, they're calling again. And it's like, weren't you a spy too? Like, didn't you marry into this? Like, why are you so sour about like the whole fact that like he's getting calls and at weird times of the day and like breaking up your weekend together? And like, she seems really sour about the whole situation. And I'm just like, that's kind of how he makes a living. Like, why is this now a big deal? Like, you did this too, didn't you? Like, did y'all notice that as well? Or is that just me? I guess not.
No, I don't know. I don't know whether I was retroactively okay with it, knowing that she was a spy. So that's kind of a problem of the screenplay that, like, later things have to rationalize earlier character motivations.
Yeah, sure.
But I don't know if I was really bothered with that. I mean, I also think it was just, like, I think this movie also wanted to get across, and I'm not sure how effectively it did, is that having a child and being married changes your life dramatically.
Yes.
I guess. No, oh, yeah, it's true. They're not.
No,
they're
and,
not
and so what
Nazis
I'm saying
anymore.
Is. So as Brian can attest to.
It's true. I used to shoot Nazis all the time, and then Cora was born. And you know what? It really. I don't even know if I should make this joke. It really bums me out because, as you all know, I live in D.C. And last week there were a shit ton of Nazis here, and I could have shot all of them, but I had to watch the baby. So good for you, whatever that guy's name is, Spencer.
Something. Yeah. Yeah. We don't. Need
we're
to
gonna
be
locked
but
in
nope,
the Trump
I had
regime.
To clean up after Cora.
Yeah.
We're definitely on a watch list now. As soon as this gets published.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'd say is, in terms of what you were talking about, Bill, is I think that was trying to get across that, like, her view of this entire thing was just like, man, I really wish I wasn't doing, or excuse me, I really wish that my husband wasn't doing this anymore and that this wasn't our life. And like, so in that in between being a spy and being and fully embracing something like a housewife, which is not something it's not a character trait that really emerges, obviously, in that first act in terms of Marion Cotillard's character. It doesn't, especially you have that early scene where they're talking about sex and how she just says it's a thing to do. You know, you have that whole suggestive scene where they're in a sweltering, I don't want to say apartment, that's probably the wrong cultural term, but where they're in the, where they're eating Mediterranean food, and her, you know, her blouse is, or she's opening it up button by button. So, you know, I think that's what the movie was trying to do. I honestly, again, as we talk about it more, is that like there is a very different movie that could have been made with cutting with both this footage, and I want to know what isn't in this movie. You know, we talked briefly about Lizzie Caplan, and she's a character who it seems like there's potentially a lot more involving her.
Right. I mean, that's what I was saying. I think this movie could have benefited from being longer. And it does feel like they were like, yeah, you know, we have a 2-hour and 40-minute cut, but let's just knock it down to 2 hours and 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I had a lot of issues with this movie, and I don't. Well, it, again, it just comes down to, like, at the end of the day, for me, it wasn't fun. And it wasn't even thought-provoking or interesting on an emotional level. And it's just, it was a real bummer. Like, my wife and I rarely get to go see movies together anymore. And we went out to see this because my mother and father and grandmother were like, you know, you're not going to see this baby the entire time that you're here in New York. So we went out and saw this together, and we were really excited to go, like, see a movie. And of course it had to be a disappointing one.
Okay.
So thanks, Bobby Z. Thanks for making a really disappointing movie.
I feel bad that I said this was good now, because I
good.
Well,
I want you to feel this, you son of a bitch.
make the emotions real, Michael. Make them real.
If that's not the most Brian thing I've ever heard in my life.
What, good. I want you to feel this.
Yeah.
All right. I think we've said all that we need to say, and we can get on out of here. So that was our review of Allied. It is out in theaters now. I don't know how well it's doing out there in the land of box office.
It's not doing that well. It only made $10 million this weekend.
No, it's how much they were expecting it to make. It was coming out against Moana. I think it's
which has made. Yeah, and Moana just took all the money.
A boatload.
Yeah.
Second best Thanksgiving weekend opening of all time.
What was the first?
That is a great question, and that's why I'm reading right now. Hold on.
Okay. Well, look into that.
Oh, behind Frozen. Oh.
Ooh. Oh, Jesus. Hey. I still like
Thanksgiving
Frozen.
Weekend. Didn't the Twilight movies used to open every Thanksgiving?
Oh, I don't know.
I feel like they had that.
That's its own separate Black Friday.
Oh, God.
I saw anyway, it was in theaters.
So that's all for today. Thank you for joining us. Next week, we have the round table coming out. So you will be able to hear us talking about... I keep wanting to say movie food, when really it's food movies.
We could do movie food.
No, we're going to be doing food movies. Yeah.
Let's quit calling it food movies. We are doing movies about food.
Okay, yes. We're doing movies about food.
Movie food.
We'll
yeah.
also be talking about whether or not making you cry is the mark of a successful movie or a good movie. I guess we'll be able to hash all that out. Mm-hmm. And then next weekend, we're probably going to be talking about one of the smaller films that's coming out, though I don't know which one it will be. So stay tuned and look on our Twitter. We will tweet out what we are seeing when we decide what we're going to see. And don't forget to get your free month trial of Mubi by going to mubi.com/filmstage. Mubi has their first United States theatrical release, and that is Baden Baden or Baden Baden. I'm going to say Baden Baden. It's B-A-D-E-N space B-A-D-E-N. And that will be out on the Mubi platform after its theatrical run. So get your 30-day free trial and you can see it if you don't live in New York or LA. And Mike, this is again something you said you were deeply interested in, that you'd heard interesting things about. And
yes, I had.
So that's mubi.com/filmstage for your free month trial. And that is it. This is a strange episode because it's taken us all day to record, but we've somehow magically reached the end. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Let us tell you in the meantime where we can be found online. Bill Graham.
You can find me brushing up on my Parisian on Twitter at CableBFG. You can also find me writing about movies on The Film Stage and FreshFiction.tv.
All right, Michael Snydell.
You can find me on Twitter at Snydell, hopefully not threatening too many Nazis, but hopefully enough.
We're coming for you, Nazis. I've played a lot of Wolfenstein. I've been preparing for this moment.
The new one's great, so yeah. We could probably talk about that for at least an hour.
Totally.
I probably writing things this week, but I definitely don't know what. You know what? Like year-end stuff is coming out soon. So,
yeah.
All right.
Lots of that going down.
And I'm Brian Rowan. You can find me on Twitter, live tweeting the blue dye test that I will be giving my own wife at Brian J. Rowan. And you can find my writing at dearfilm.net and thefilmstage.com. So ladies and gentlemen, thank you once again for joining us, and have a great week.
Devil or angel, dear, whichever you are, I miss you, I miss you. I miss you. Devil or angel, please say you'll be mine. Love me or leave me, I'll